Hello, everyone in the room and online. Welcome to the September 3rd, 2025 meeting of the Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. Remember, this is a public meeting and it is also being audio recorded. So anything that you may miss, you are more than welcome to go back to the county website and find the recording. To begin our meeting, do we have any community input? I'm looking around the room to see if there's any hands up. And online.
Darla just joined online if she has any. Unless she's...
Okay. Oh, I see a hand up. Eva.
Hi. I think I might be joining the board. So I'm excited about that, but I also have some community input.
Okay.
Since I haven't officially joined yet, I will join as a community member right now. I just met with a client who has a similar situation in our community where an adult child with IBD went into the hospital, the ER, and then the doctors and the team would not speak to their parents whatsoever, even though they had an effective power of attorney that I myself drafted. And that is an experience that keeps happening, and I'm hoping when I am on the board that there's a way that I can be bringing that issue to the board and to the county. So I hope that's helpful. I guess I could explain further. She's deaf and she did not have any interpreter for her and didn't have a lot of the things that she needed. And the hospital system just said, we're not talking to your parents because you're an adult and they're not going to be consulted. And they got completely iced out. And this happens to people with guardianship papers, and it happens to people with power of attorney. Local hospitals, Legacy, and Peace Health do not honor those important documents for our IDD adults who need their parents' help when they're in the hospital. Anyways, thank you for letting me raise that issue.
Thank you, Eva. You mind if I say something
cool
about that?
Yeah.
I will follow up with you about that and maybe perhaps make some connections and see if there's anything that we can help with that. This is Trish, if you can't see me.
Thank you.
On that note.
Yeah, and Randy?
Yeah, I was talking to another parent who happens to be running for school board, and her son lives in HUD housing, and when she has full guardianship, but there was issues with the apartment and all kinds of things going on, and they will not talk to her even though she has full guardianship. So this is something that's occurring in a lot of places where it's not being honored. So Might be time to get the word out that they need to obey the law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was great interviewing Eva. We had the opportunity to do that this week.
Yeah. Anyone else? Yeah, because it seems I can only speak from experience with my father as he aged and was in the hospital, but there was definitely paperwork that was on file in the hospital's database that spoke to not necessarily guardianship, but his advance directive and all of that stuff. And it seems that that could be something that would be in the hospital database. But I don't know, Darla, do you know anything else? Or Hattie, are you familiar with any of that from a legislative standpoint? And
I'm not familiar from a legislative standpoint, and I had trouble getting the link. So I think somehow I've fallen off that. I'm not getting the notices of the meetings any longer, so I need to make sure I get back on the list. So I didn't hear everything you had to say, but if you're talking about hospitals not respecting and interacting with guardians in an appropriate way, Absolutely. We've had hospitals sending, calling, having people physically removed. Mm-hmm. We've had hospitals having patients released prior to when they were going to be released, not because medically they were ready to be released, but because they wanted the guardians, they didn't want to deal with the situations any longer. We've had years of this going on. And I have gone to the ethics, because each hospital has a, I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's like an ethics coordinator or something like that. And I've gone to them. And when you go to them, that's when the individual ends up getting released from the hospital. It's like all of a sudden you go to the ethics coordinator, the individual gets released from the hospital, so then it's no longer an issue. But yeah, I've spent a lot of time in hospitals with families, and so this is definitely an ongoing problem and an ongoing issue.
It's an issue that Darla has asked me to help in some cases with, and once an attorney gets involved, then the hospital or the medical setting behaves differently, but that shouldn't have to happen.
Yeah.
And it is not the same as the end-of-life elders. This is specifically our adults with IDD and hospitals icing out their parent, guardian, caregivers with guardianship papers or powers of attorney, which should allow them to participate. But hospitals say, oh, you're over 18, you don't have to let your parents in the room, and they don't want the parents sticking their nose in all this. They would love for the parents to just step away and let them do what they're gonna do. But for this young lady, you know, they moved her to a facility in Multnomah County without even telling the parents or asking if this is covered under her insurance. They provided no deaf interpreter, nothing, and they would not communicate with the parents whatsoever until I stepped in. And then the communication was simply, we're discharging her, come pick her up right now. And that is a common, what Darla's telling you is that is not an uncommon experience for a young adult with IDD in Clark County with medical, in medical facilities here in Clark County. And it's, I can tell you all the law about it at some other time, but the law is not the problem. Problem is the hospital community, and we need to get in there and talk to them about our population. Mm-hmm.
Gabriella, you have something to add?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I just parked in the parking lot. I'm walking down. I just wanted to say, yes, we've seen the same situation with even young adults, well, 17 years old. They're not even 18, to where if they don't have a guardianship paperwork, they still do the same thing. They don't want to talk to parents, and they do whatever they want. And sometimes, for non-English speaker parents, it's even more difficult to navigate that situation, and things get worse. So, this is an ongoing issue, and I think we do need to look into that. Thank you for bringing this up, Emma.
Yeah. Thank you, Gabrielle. Okay. Darling,
sorry. The other issue we have, and I don't want to muddy the waters, but in Washington State, there's a law that says that after the age, I believe it's 13, that individuals do not have to have their families involved around mental health or sexual, like birth control, sexually transmitted diseases, those kinds of things. And our medical professionals in Clark County have taken that law and made it a blanket with all medical issues, all medications, all everything. If the individual is over 18, they say the family, or over 13, sorry, over 13, they say the family doesn't have to be involved. Okay. And then that becomes, if you have a neurotypically developing child, they can sign a waiver to let the parent communicate. But if you have a child with IDD, oftentimes if they go to sign that waiver, the medical facility will say that individual is not competent to sign the waiver for the parent to be involved. Yet, they're over 13, so the law is still in effect, and the parent can't engage in communication with the physicians without the individual's consent. So it's this catch-22, and we've taken this quite a ways and never gotten anywhere with it. But it also is a huge problem that honestly just today we were dealing with.
It's a solvable problem, but solving it one attorney and one person coming to me and finding an attorney to make the call is not the most efficient way to do it, and it's not fair for our families. But it's a solvable problem if we can get the right county people in, and I have all the words and I know all the law, but we just need to get the right people in front of the right people at the hospitals. So,
have you had the individual request that the parents be in the meeting? Because I had a situation where I took my son to a meeting and he wasn't able to answer all the questions, so he specifically asked the doctor that I want my mom in the meeting, so I was able to go in and help, communicate.
Sometimes somebody is in there. The reason why they came to the ER, their parents brought them, is because they're having a bit of a mental health issue. Another problem, and they have IBD, and they're not clear thinking because of whatever's going on. So but they did the right documents, all the right documents are in place, but the hospital finds it much easier to ignore those documents and misread the law and just ice parents out so they can just do what they need to do and get it done and leave parents out of it.
I would, if okay, like to recognize and address the other end of the spectrum of this issue where hospitals are requiring parents and family members to provide 24-hour personal care for the individuals while they're in the hospitals as well. The hospitals are saying that they're unable to provide personal care past the scope of like nursing or medical assisting that any other patient would get, especially if there is an individual that high behavioral needs or with mental health needs that might fall under their parents in like a guardianship scope, they're requiring them to provide the personal care.
Okay. Any other information to be brought up or conversation around this disturbing topic? Any other community input? I know, Darla, you joined us late and it seems like you usually have something.
Well, I just want to, I'm sure Hattie probably announced this, but I just want to make sure and re-announce it that we will not be having our International Day of Peace celebration this year. We're going to be focusing on inner peace this year, and we're going to be putting out some stuff, hoping that we can help facilitate everyone else to focus on inner peace and individual peace. And then next year is our 10-year anniversary, so we'll be doing a big celebration next year.
Okay, thank you. All right. And any other community input?
Hi, Hattie again. I guess I'd like to do a little plug. I am starting with Peace a book club called Pages with Purpose. We will be focusing on disability advocacy and history, and really focusing on the big moments in history that the community created laws surrounding disability policy and how that has really taken shape through self-advocacy and family advocacy.
in a way to try to get people more engaged in the legislative process and really feel like they can make a difference by hearing the history and the stories of how others before them have. I can share that flyer so it can go out to the good of the whole, but we will be meeting virtually on the first Thursdays of the month, starting in October from 6 to 7 p.m. And then also that next day on Friday, we will have an opportunity for people to meet in person at the Peace Office, kind of as like a lunch table conversation where we will be discussing the books that we have read.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Hattie. Okay, Darla.
All right, I'll send you guys all the flyers, but we're also doing an emerging leaders group for our self-advocates that will be starting, I don't remember the date off the top of my head. I want to say it's in October. And so the CEA did one on a state level, and it looked amazing, but a lot of our individuals really wanted to participate in it and couldn't because they couldn't get up to Tacoma for the last one. So we're going to replicate it and have it available here locally as well. So it locally, it'll be in person, but it'll also be available virtually for individuals that are farther away and can't get here in person.
Okay.
I have some.
All right, Trish.
I wanted to share our flyer for our comprehensive plan survey. So we have our comprehensive plan. We're currently accepting feedback and seeking feedback through October 31st, 2025. I'm putting the flyer up with the QR code on the screen. If anybody wants to scan that with their phone, that'll take you directly to the survey. And I'll also put the link in the chat as well. So please, it went out via email. Well, you'll probably see it in your email a few more times before the end of the period, just so we can make sure that everybody's sharing it with your networks. So share with anybody that you think would be interested in giving their input. And we really are looking for broad input into the plan. We want to make sure that this is the community's plan and get as many people to contribute as possible. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Josh. Okay. Survey's coming your way, it sounds like. Lots of paperwork. Okay. Any other community input before we move on? Okay. So our special orders, our first agenda item is our property tax exemptions, and
is that Holly?
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
And if you want to stand up here further so we can hear you and our microphone can pick you up for our
What is it?
I know that I think that was like...
Do you want me to pull up the presentation? Or
yes, please.
That's the microphone.
Oh, okay.
You can just stand where you are.
Okay,
yeah. So Holly Hill, for those of you online, is from the Clark County Assessor's Office?
Yes, so I am the Program Outreach Coordinator for the Assessor's Office. I've been there just over 2 years, and this is a really exciting program. It's something we really love to do. I will say, working in the assessor's office, you get to hear a lot of the positive and a lot of the negative interacting with the public, but we get really, really good feedback on this program, and it really is a program that all of our joint lobby, we work with the auditor, assessor, and treasurer all in the office. Everybody really buys in and has a lot of passion for helping the community, so really excited to be here today and share about this with you guys.
Let's see how this slide should be, sorry.
Okay.
There we go.
Perfect. So could you skip to the next slide? Perfect. So we're going to talk about an overview of the program, just kind of what it's all about. go over qualifications and eligibility, talk about the income thresholds for the program, explain what income means for the program, talk about deductions because we do take certain medical deductions to help lower your income for the program, required documents, 2025 legislative updates, how to apply, and then how to get a hold of us, and conclusion. So first thing, this is a Washington State program. It is administered by each county assessor's office in Washington State, and we get guidance from the Washington State Department of Revenue. The rules of the program are set by the Washington State Legislature, so every time we have a change for the program, that had to go all the way to Olympia and then all the way back. So the purpose is to reduce property tax liability for those on a limited income, and most commonly that is our senior citizens and our folks with disabilities here in Clark County. This is to help them age gracefully, age in place in their homes, despite increasing property taxes and fluctuating living costs. How it works is in the year that you qualify, it freezes the assessed value of the property, so home and land. It exempts the taxpayers from paying any voter-approved levies and the state school tax part two. It reduces the taxable value of the property based on income. There is no obligation for repayment. It does not put a lien on your home. And applications are renewed every 6 years maximum, so it's not a program that you have to apply for every single year. All right, and to qualify for the program, you have to meet the qualifications by the end of the year prior to qualify for this year. So if you want to qualify this year in 2025, you have to meet all the qualifications by end of last year. So you have to own and reside in your home as your primary residence for at least 6 months of the year. So if you just purchased a home last year in 2024, we just hope that you're moved in by June so that you can qualify this year. And then you have to qualify either based on age, 61 years of age or older, or disability status. You can qualify by disability a few different ways, through Social Security, through the Veterans Administration, or we do have a form if you are still kind of working on getting approved through one of those organizations. We have a form in our office that you can take and have your primary care physician fill out on your behalf, saying that you cannot maintain substantial gainful employment, I believe is what the legislature says. And then the income threshold for the program is $62,000 or below. So we break the income down into three different tiers where basically your savings go up as your income goes down. In tiers one and two, you're exempt from paying property tax on a portion of your assessed value. You're exempt from paying those voter-approved levies, and your home and land value are frozen in the qualifying year. And in Tier 3, you're only exempt from paying those voter-approved or excess levies. You're exempt from paying the state school taxes Part 2, and your home and land value are frozen in the year that you qualify. So even though you're not exempt from being taxed on a portion of your assessed value in that third tier, it is really still worth giving it a shot to apply. Most people on this program look at saving about half on their property taxes, and even that state school tax part two can be a few hundred to even a few, you know, almost $1,000 depending where you live. So that can be a pretty hefty part of your tax bill. And what counts as income? So for income, we count all your typical sources, wages if you're still working from W-2s. The most common ones we see are pensions, annuities, interest, IRA distributions. And then we do not count but still want to see documentation for any VA disability payments, DSHS payments, federal stimulus payments like the ones we got in 2020 and 2021, any IRA rollovers, and any reverse mortgages. So for all of the income that we count and exclude, we need to see documentation for all of it. And what counts as deductions? Deductions are really great. They help lower your income for the program. So somebody can come to our office and have, you know, approximate income of about $70,000. They can bring us $8,000 of deductions or more, and we can lower it to get them on the program. They're also really great if someone is in between two income thresholds and we think we can get them a little bit lower and get them more savings. So that's going to be basically anything that you pay out of pocket to your insurance. If you collect Social Security, then we deduct the Medicare, all parts that come out of that. Any in-home care expenses, nursing or adult family home expenses, health insurance cost sharing out of pocket, even naturopathic or chiropractic expenses if they are a Washington State licensed naturopathic chiropractor. We also have a really, really long list of medical and mobility enhancing deductions. Those can be things like cough litters or suction tubes, so anything disposable or permanent. But contact our list if you want a whole list of deductions, because I could rattle off all day. So required documents. These are all set up so that they tick off one of our eligibility requirements. We're not just nosy. We actually want to make sure that you're meeting the qualifications. Driver's license helps confirm your address and your age. If you don't have that, then we want to see your disability award letter. We want to see your complete tax return if you do file. If you don't file, then we want to see all the other 1099s that you do have. If you don't have those, then bank statements will work as well. We are very flexible. We just need some documentation. And if applicable, if you have a different ownership situation, like you just recently had a divorce, an owner passed away, or you put your home in a trust, then we want to see the documentation that goes with those situations as well. All right, and then the legislative update this year was previously on the program, we excluded any accessory dwelling units, and now in this tax year and going forward, they are allowed. So that can be something like a hardship mobile, a tiny home, a mother-in-law unit, a little backyard cottage. So if somebody has already been on the program and had a previously excluded outbuilding and would now like to include it in their exemption, they can contact our office and get their exemption level adjusted. All right, and how to apply. We have a bunch of ways to apply because we want to make this as easy as possible, not only for the applicant, but potentially family members if they are helping. During the pandemic, our assessor, Peter Van Nortwick, had the idea to set up an online portal so that if somebody living in Washington had family members in another state, the family members could help them virtually apply. So that is a really huge coup for our office. That has worked out really, really well. If you're not tech savvy, though, we still do take appointments and walk-ins in our office. We're located downtown Vancouver at 1300 Franklin Street, second floor of the Public Service Center. Appointments are available on select days, but you can also just walk in Monday to Thursday, 9 to 4. And if you don't want to see anybody, talk to anybody, you can also mail it to us or drop it at the secure Dropbox on the first floor. So we have a bunch of different ways to apply. If it's your first time applying, though, I always recommend that you come into our office. I think one of the things I hear the most is that people are daunted by the amount of paperwork they have to collect. They get kind of confused, and I say, don't figure it out on your own. We have experts. We are experts. We are here for you. We are here to support you. So we are really trying to encourage people, if they have any confusion, just get a hold of our office, because we work with this every day, and you probably don't, unless you're also working in another county. In that case, congrats. But leave it to the experts. Lean on us. We are here to help you in any way possible. I also have been working throughout the last year to collect a support of community services, so that even if somebody can't qualify for our program this year, they're not leaving our office empty-handed. So we can always try to find them another resource that can help them through PUD with utilities, or through Clark Wastewater with lower sewage costs. So, you know, there are a lot of things out there, and our office is truly here to help and support. So that's kind of it for me, but
that's great.
Thank you. Yeah. Any questions?
Yeah. That was a splendid presentation, by the way.
I watch a lot of presentations.
Yes.
And that was excellent.
Wow.
Thank you.
So when will you be running for assessor?
Oh,
I know.
Next year, huh?
I don't know. I think she's got a TED Talk.
That
was
right.
Thank you.
And do you have support from Language Access?
Yes, we actually do. So we got our applications transferred into four core languages, Russian, Ukrainian, Spanish, and Simplified Mandarin. We also have a person in office, a couple people in office who speak Spanish, and we work with the language line. So if somebody comes in and is not English speaking and we don't have anyone to help them in office, we have a phone line or a video camera that we can set up an appointment with right on the spot and help them.
ASL.
ASL as well, yes. Mm-hmm. We actually do get a lot of ASL people, and we do have to utilize the language line for ASL a lot. So it's been really, really helpful for this communication.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's
great.
Any other questions? I'm looking for hands up online, and I'm not seeing any.
Eva has her hand up.
Eva
has
her hand up. Oh, Eva, sorry.
That was a really great presentation, and I just missed of the resources that are excluded, like a retirement account is not excluded.
For income?
No, I'm thinking more resources. So if somebody has a large retirement account, usually somebody with disability isn't going to have a retirement account, but they might have a special needs trust or an ABLE account, and I was assuming those aren't an issue, and distributions from them wouldn't be income.
No, it would just count the distribution, potentially. I would have to I honestly haven't come across any specific situations like the one you've named, so I would have to triple check. I think if anything, we would just count the distribution. One great thing about this program is it's not asset-based, so we don't care how much you have in your savings account, we don't care how much your home is worth, we just care what you're pulling out and actually collecting in that year.
It might be worth having a conversation with a special needs planning attorney on that, because the district, so SSI, for example, an exempt asset to have a special needs trust, and then the distributions coming out of it are generally exempt except for certain things. So maybe that might be something to fine tune it, because a lot of people do have special needs trusts.
Yes.
And those are the same people that you're trying to benefit with this program.
Very true. Also, another caveat with this program is we do count some non-taxable and taxable sources of income, so all taxable and some non-taxable, depending on the distribution. So like for Social Security, we count that full distribution, and I know the IRS only counts, you know, the taxable part. So I will look into that, because that is a really good query, and I do want to have a better answer next time that comes up. So I will consult with the DOR and potentially with the lead to get a better concept of that and how it would work.
Sure, I'm happy to help with that conversation anytime.
Wonderful, thank you.
Eva happens to be a special needs attorney.
Oh,
and,
all right.
And a pending, and a pending member of our advisory board.
Okay,
so
you're the gal to talk to.
Well, it seems like a lot of those withdrawals from the ABLE accounts, whatnot, might fall under the medical, you know, the deductions, things that can be deducted to lower your income.
They could potentially.
Yeah. All right, any other questions while we have Holly?
Just a comment. We were on the receiving end of this for my mother-in-law and father-in-law, and you guys were super helpful.
Thank you. I'm really happy to hear it. It's a really wonderful program. I mean, getting to, you know, help people who have lived here their whole lives and are now worried about losing their homes or not being able to afford it anymore is really, really rewarding. Another caveat with this, and actually a great bonus, is that if you qualify for the current year, you can potentially qualify to apply for 3 years retroactively for potential for a refund.
Okay.
So we can correct your old tax bill, and then the balance between the old bill and the new exempt bill would come back to you in the form of a refund.
Oh, wow.
It's a really wonderful program. Thank you so much for letting me be here and talk to you about it today. And I am on a resource if you guys have any questions. All our contact information is on the back, and I stapled a card to the people here in person, to their brochure. So, yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
And for those online, I did put the link to the website in the chat, and then it is also available on the advisory board meeting resources that we have posted on our website.
All right. Thank you, Holly. And our next item on our agenda is just to have a discussion about our October, which is scheduled to be a work session. And typically the first Wednesday of the month, it is also a religious holiday. So we are not having our work session on that day. We also have our very special Disability Employment Awareness Month celebration, which is scheduled for the following Wednesday, October 8th, which will be held at Clark College. And so asking our advisory board members, do we want to still have an October work session in addition to our October 8th celebration? Do we want to reschedule on it for a different work session date in October, or do we just want to cancel meeting in October other than our very special October awards? Amy, are you having a thought? Is that
I have a question.
A question.
Yes. Trish, sorry, I put you right on the spot.
That's okay.
We've been using our work sessions to plan the strategic...
The comprehensive plan.
Yeah. Sorry, all of a sudden the words went away as I was making a question. Yes, beautiful. I looked at it online. And I wonder, is there any work that we might want to be addressing in October? I know that we're going to be closing the survey on October 31st, and I wouldn't want to
I want to reschedule our work group if we have some work that really needs to be done, but I'm okay foregoing it if we feel like we don't have work until after the 31st. And I do know we've gone over a calendar, but now I cannot remember our scope.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, if y'all are considering canceling that meeting, well, we're not having it on the 1st. If you just want to cancel and not try to reschedule it in the month of October, I would just say that there are likely going to be things that John Lund and I will be sending to you and questions that we may be posing during that time to get your direction and input. So that would be my ask, is that y'all watch your emails and respond during that time. And I think that that would be fine. Like, I think that we could get the work done that we need to at that time.
And yeah. Thank you for not holding the meeting on the holiest day of the year. I appreciate that. I need to talk
Absolutely.
To Stevie Nicks because she's having her only concert in Portland on Yom Kippur.
Oh, no.
You're allowed to go. Stevie Nicks is worth it. Thank you. Can you tell my mom? Mom.
Okay.
Stevie Nicks.
I know.
So do you want to take a motion?
So our, yeah, so if we want to go ahead and cancel
the
meeting with the caveat that if anything is sent to us virtually, that we respond in a timely manner, if we're in the country.
Yeah. If you can. And would you want to entertain a motion that staff also review 2026 when we're planning next year's calendar to make sure that there is no conflict with
yeah,
any other
yes,
religious
please.
Holidays? Okay.
Yes.
So anyway, just as you're considering your motions.
Yes. Would anybody like to make a motion one way or another? Amy?
I'll make a motion. I move that we forego the October 2025 work session scheduled on the 1st, and that we do not reschedule it, but instead attend to our email to have timely response to staff as they need it, working on the comprehensive plan.
Second.
Okay. Any conversation, discussion? Any motion to,
oh my gosh.
All in favor? I forgot my Rogers rule of order. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay. So Amy's motion has passed. We will cancel our October meeting and look for any opportunities for input via email from either Trish or John Love.
Continue to follow up on Trish's request.
Okay.
I move that we request staff to review the 2026 calendar to ensure that we do not have meetings conflicting with any cultural or religious holidays.
Second. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Raise your hand. Happy. All those any opposed? Okay. So that motion has also passed.
You're so woke.
Thank you. And thank you for bringing that up, Trish.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Next item is Hattie and Darla, and or Darla, with a legislative update. Hattie, would you like to go first?
Hi. Sure. Hi, everyone. Hattie here. Thank you for having me. I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person, but we had scheduling conflicts with me and my husband. And as far as a legislative update, I don't have a ton. I know the last meeting in, what was it, gosh, July, we were able to go over post-Governor Ferguson signing the budget. I know we had talked about the looming federal bill. I can't quite remember if it had been signed at that point. And I will say that what I have to present on, please take with a grain of salt. Please understand that this is just at this exact moment in time, that things are always subject to change, because what Office of Financial Management, or OFM, is reporting at this very moment sounds a lot better than what we are actually looking at. So there we go. So legislative action during the 2025 session significantly boosted the state's revenue projection. The general fund forecast rose by $3.8 billion for 2025 through 2027, $3.6 billion for 2027 to 2028, according to the Office of Financial Management. This boost in revenue projection came only after OFM instructed state agencies to submit proposals for significant operating budget reductions, including cuts to staffing and essential services. A new revenue update is expected September 23rd, 2025. Over 700 positions from DSHS will be cut or have been cut or will not be filled. So that was part of that reduction and why we are in a, looking like we have a surplus at this very moment in time. As we look ahead to the 2026 session, talk consists of securing and stabilizing funding, considering looming risk of a potential federal funding decrease. In addition, all bills that fail to pass during the 2025 session will be eligible for reconsideration in 2026. And then lastly, 9 legislative seats, 5 Senate and 4 House seats will be decided in the upcoming November 4th general election, and they are all from the Seattle area. Any questions?
Patty, I have a question. So far as, are y'all hearing anything on the federal level? I know that we have that one big beautiful bill that passed, but then it's my understanding that the federal, once Congress returns from break, they're going to be back doing budget things. Are y'all hearing anything about that?
So, yes, I do know that Congress reconvened today, actually.
They're back.
And they are, the House is scheduled to be in session until, I think, the first 3 weeks of the month. They're home the week of the 22nd and then going through the end of October. And the Senate, I believe their session is in until December. I'm sure they have a break in there for Thanksgiving and a few other things. But I do know that they will be working on, I have this pulled up. Cause right now my understanding is there was kind of a stopgap for federal funding, that was passed and they need to like ratify it by, I believe it's the end of September. So that is something that they will be working on in the interim. Trish, I did send to you and Trudy a document that the healthcare authority, kind of a fact sheet, had lined out the dates of the new federal that came under the big beautiful bill with the new changes to Medicaid, and that lines it up in chronological order about what is expected to change. Most of the things that are changing, I have it up, where is it? Don't happen until December 2026. You can make your own conclusions as to why they chose to pause it until then, to delay it until then. But yeah.
Uh-oh. Did you see what I just pulled up, Hattie? Was that what you were talking about?
No, it didn't. I mean, I didn't see it. Nothing actually pulled up there.
Oh, okay. I'm going to try it again. Let me try again.
Yeah, it didn't pull up a document.
I believe it's titled Medicaid Fact Sheet.
Oh, Medicaid in Washington State.
Yeah, Medicaid in Washington
okay.
State Fact
Oh, great.
Sheet.
Okay. So this we will put on our website as well, so that y'all can have access to this.
Yeah. I think it's important for us all to familiarize ourselves with what is kind of coming down the pipeline and what we can prepare for. I do know that... with talking to some legislators that they are expecting that the state is going to have to backfill a lot of federal cuts that will be coming to the state of Washington. So as OFM is reporting right now that things sound fine, again, it's this very moment in time and we are really prepping for a strong message of no cuts. Don't cut these essential services. Cuts cause crisis. We were cut back during, you know, the recession and the early aughts, and we still have not even gotten funded to the point that we were cut back in, you know, 08, 09. So we really need to preserve and protect what we have.
Okay. Okay, Randy has her hand up.
Yeah, Hattie, is there any updates to what is happening with IDEA with the deconstruction of the Department of Education at the federal level?
Nothing? I don't have enough information to talk on that.
Not every person we serve is on Medicaid.
Right. I do know that a ton of money... at the state level was invested into special education this last legislative session, which will hopefully preserve a lot of those programs and services that our districts are providing at this point in time. I don't know how IDEA will come into effect with that, but I do know that Washington State believes that fully funding education is its paramount duty. And with or without, IDEA, I think we would probably have a really good opportunity for maybe a McCleary Part 2 type situation. I'm really not sure, but I can get some information on that and send it out.
That'd be great. Thank you.
And,
yeah.
I don't know if Amy might have some additional information. And we are meeting with our local special education directors, and we're asking them for ways that we can partner. And I believe that request came from you all about, so that you all can stay informed about education law that affects the people that we support as well. So we're kind of looking for what those connection points might be. But I don't know if you have anything to add, Amy.
No, I was just saying that... education is the paramount duty of the state, and the funding level for public education in the state of Washington has continued to drop as an overall percentage of the state budget since McCleary. So while there was money sent for special education, the cost of education, like everything else, continues to rise. The needs in our community continue to grow, and public education is a place where we're able to address some of the gaps that exist, and I think this is, hopefully we'll hear from superintendents that we have a lot of locals that are also struggling financially. I think there are 8 school districts in the state of Washington now, which is a record high, that are in binding conditions, which means they have run out of money, and the state will, and OSPI will have to take over fiscal responsibility. So it's a really challenging time where the cost of education continues to rise, and addressing I mean, I'm teaching special education, and there's a lot of need right now in our community. So I think there is a partnering that needs to happen, and making sure families can get all their needs met is really challenging right now.
There's some comments in the chat. Would you like me to read those, mm-hmm. Chair?
Okay.
There's some comments in the chat. You want me to read those?
Yeah.
Eva says, how did we get suckered into calling a bill law that hurts our community big and beautiful every time we refer to it, like saying the gentleman who murdered my sister? And Eva says, you can call it public law 119-21 if you're looking for an alternative.
I've been hearing that on the radio.
Like, public law 119-21?
Yeah, they're not called. And I think that calling it, for me personally, now it's personal commentary, it makes me cringe when I hear big, beautiful bill. And so I feel like that's what I'd like to induce when I think about it. Cringe gay.
Absolutely. I have just one thing to add about Public Law 119-21. I am hearing from DDA that they are working, well, Developmental Disabilities Community Services, formerly known as DDA. They have been working on their analysis of the impact to people that are eligible for Developmental Disability Community Services. And it sounds like there definitely will be impacts. And though they are, it's less than what we might have thought they were, we are asking for something in writing that they can share that can be shareable. And it sounds like they're working on something. So I don't have anything to share yet from Developmental Disabilities Community Services, except that's what the rumblings are, is that for people with disabilities, like, for example, people with disabilities who are eligible for services through Developmental Disabilities Community Services will not have the work requirement. There's going to be a limited number of people that will have the eligibility review every 6 months as opposed to every year. So they're working on getting something that can be shared out. And they're also understanding that even if there are people that will not be directly impacted, individuals may be impacted by services that they no longer will have access to, and or their families or other people in their circles that rely on certain services. So there's going to be definitely secondary impacts as well. And it looks like Hattie said this is an article from National Education Association about the dismantlement of Department of Ed and how it will impact IDEA. So we'll make sure that we post that link on our website as well.
Thank you.
For the meeting resources.
And Darla, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that while it may not directly impact our individuals with IDD, many of our individuals with IDD are already getting their Social Security attacked, and their Medicaid eligibility is attached to their SSI. And so if once they lose their SSI, then they're losing their Medicaid eligibility as well. And so we are seeing individuals losing services in roundabout ways, even though it may not be through the so-called front door. They are losing services, already being impacted in a multitude of ways.
Okay, so
speaking of legislative updates and challenges, our final item on our agenda this evening is our legislative update, because we need to be prepared to speak with our local representatives coming up when session starts up. So we would like to get that done by November, which means we have work to do. And so do we want to, I think everybody has a copy that's in the room anyway of what we presented as our legislative priorities for 2025. And for those of you online, it looks like Trish is getting ready to pull up a shareable, viewable.
Yeah, I've shared it on the Zoom meeting, and then it's also available on our meeting resources on our website as well.
Yeah. You should, if you got an email inviting you, which sounds like some of you didn't, to the meeting, it was attached to that as well. And so I'm thinking back, and I'm not remembering, it seems like some of these items were addressed in the last legislative session. And I want to say it might have been around restraint and isolation, or am I just dreaming that?
There was, I think, a budget proviso that allowed for training on, nonviolent crisis intervention to hopefully limit, but there was not a law.
Okay.
Randy has a comment. Susan?
On the note of restraint and seclusion, it's currently local election season, and one of the things I've been doing is engaging with school board candidates to see if they support banning restraint and seclusion. And you would be surprised at their reactions, especially folks that are former teachers that will not commit to doing that. So I would highly encourage all of the members of the board to talk to these candidates, because you want to know how a school board feels about it. We don't always have to look to the state to solve it. This is something we can be solving in our own community. And I've spoken to several, and they don't get it. I'll leave it at that. Mm-hmm. So we should think about where we... And then I wanted to, on a slightly separate note, wanted to follow up. We had talked about seeing if the county council could adopt our legislative agenda, make it part of theirs, and also use our resources, the county's resources, to advocate for the things that we care about instead of just saying this is what we care about. Is there any movement on that?
I still need to talk with Jordan, is our policy person, about that. So yeah, no, not yet.
If we could just get it in front of the, you know, Washington State Association of Counties and get it more part of all of the things that we care about for the county, it would definitely rise in visibility and effectiveness.
Yeah. Did the special education multiplier for birth to three, did something happen with that? Because I know
the multiplier,
I want to say
changed,
that
some, but I don't know if it changed birth to three. I can look.
Darla, do you remember if that was adjusted?
I know we were working on it. I don't know that it went all the way through the process, though. Did it make it through and get past Hattie?
I want to say yes. I'm double-checking right now.
Okay.
I don't know if it... Because it does the special education multiplier... Would it be birth to... Is the 0 to 3 a separate item than the 8 to 21 is?
Yeah, they were disconnected. So the multiplier was, the birth to three multiplier was disconnected from the 3 to 5 year old multiplier. And so the funding's kind of grown for 3 to 5, but 0 to 3 hasn't kept up with that.
Okay.
So we just wanted to be able to link those two back up, I think was mm-hmm. what the bill was trying to do.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And it ends up being such a battle yeah. for early childhood anything.
Oh, there were, Hattie's put in chat, the restraint and isolation House Bill 1479 died, in last session and can be picked back up in January 2026.
Okay.
Yeah. And then House Bill 1916, which increased funding for, ESIT, did pass.
Okay.
Did.
13, 19.
And that was the one about the multiplier?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah,
okay.
Gabriella
has her hand up.
Oh.
Gabriella. Sorry.
Yes. During the, well, after the 2025 legislative session, we had our senators coming and doing a town hall and talking about how they funded special education more during 2025 than any other years because of what was happening with government. And I think we might want to consider to ask the in the 2026 legislative session to, because they say we put a barrier around the state to protect from what's happening at the federal level. So to ensure we have funding for education and other services. So I would say we go with the same approach to ask the legislative agenda 2026 to say protect people with disabilities to have the resources that they need to not only survive but to thrive. Because as we see things going right now, it's going to be difficult if they lose medical services and Social Security and any other services. And that was Senator Aguilera. Senator Cleveland and
Cortez,
thank you. I wanted to change his name.
I don't know what's his name.
Cortez.
Thinking about Adam.
Yes.
And then there was another bill, because they're funding public education through H-22, but Adrian Cortez had a bill, and it passed.
Well, it didn't have funding for students to stay in school after they turn 22, but now it does have funding. So now students can stay when they turn. It used to be when they turned 22, the very next day they were out of school.
Yeah.
But now they can stay until the end of the year.
Yeah, until the end of the school year. And that was what passed last year. Okay.
So do you want to say the ones that can be taken up? So you
can
agree to it?
The community service at the county level? That one?
Well, just the, you also have up there the zero to three multiplier.
Yeah.
So we could just announce which ones we might want to take off.
Okay.
And see if everyone agrees to, or if there's still some outstanding issues.
Bob, do you want to make a motion, or do you want to recommend removal of some that you're noticing and we'll agree to it?
Yeah, does somebody else want to take that up? My blood sugar is super, my Dexcom just kicked in. That was super.
Oh no. Do you want to take the lead on that? Co-chair?
Vice
chair?
Let Bob jump in.
I'll jump in.
He's got a plan. I love it.
What I'm trying to do is see if it's okay to remove some of these prior agenda items so that we have either a larger font going to legislators or or possibility of adding in something new.
Okay.
So,
maybe the medical piece that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. So, if in the first section, no budget cuts, we have the return special education multipliers. Is that something that we're satisfied that it got through enough that we can remove that subparagraph?
Yes, I'm satisfied.
Just want to make sure that like Tabby and others are,
yes.
We're all on the same page.
Can we take this off the screen so we can see Tabby and our other board members?
So, Debbie, not to put you under the pressure, but we're all nodding over here, but is that something that for you would also be a reasonable thing to take off that third bullet of the first section of the multiplier?
I will say yes, with the caveat that as long as special education is funded separately, it's never going to be equitable. So, special education needs to be funded through general education. So you can do with that what you please.
Well, I think the reason why we had that, just to make sure we're on the same page, we had that on there because we weren't getting the year-to-year adjustments to 0 to 3 that was shown in ages, in older ages.
The 3 to 5.
And so that's why we wanted to have that education multiplier in the legislation. And I thought that it was passed through. Are there parts of that that are not? I mean, I understand the bigger issue, but from a standpoint of having us sit down with legislators, does it seem reasonable to pull this section off?
So it would be a good thing to thank them for.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it sounds like what Hattie's saying is that the multipliers, yes, equitable funding has not been achieved.
That's right.
Yeah. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
So we could circle that, the equitable funding part, and come back to that when we want to introduce either additional points or modify this in the future. Okay, so we're good there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was the next thing that we were talking about that we said
through age 22 that
second bullet in the third section of fund community-based services at the county level, invest in students through age 22 but as they transition from school to adulthood, has that been addressed enough to make that a lower priority of how we might approach this in the future?
I think so. Addie was saying that now they don't get kicked out just because they turn 22 and they
get through the end of the year.
They go to the end.
Which they used to, and then when they bumped it up to 22.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's just been recently.
So, but this is talking about community-based services after graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature has funded transition services all but 1 year during the 2008 housing crash. Was 1 year that they didn't fund transition services for adults or people leaving school. So that's what that's saying. It's not necessarily. Yeah, this is community services part. Yeah, not the education part.
This is saying you got 22 and then there's that cliff.
Yeah, and so this is something that is not kind of set funding that's already established, the legislature needs to say that they're going to do this every year. Uh-huh. And if they don't say they're going to do that, it doesn't get done.
Okay. Yes.
So what would we be asking them to do?
So, you know, this has specifically been around, you know, this is under employment support. So it's around the thing that they do every year is fund employment supports for students graduating from high school. Mm-hmm. Like when they're coming, when they're aging out at age 22. So after they finish that year, then they've got something that they can access after school.
Can they access employment. That sooner if they choose not to sit at school for 3 or 4 extra years?
There's different ways to access employment supports. The long-term supports wouldn't be available through the county, and Tavi helped me out, but there are things that are available through Job Foundation and through Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, and they do have kind of extended supports that might be available. And then once the person is old enough to access long-term supports, then our services would kick in. Did I say that okay, Tavi?
Yes, that was perfect.
Okay, all right, good. Yes, so there are ways to access younger if somebody doesn't choose to go into a transition program and in school.
Are there any other bullet points that people feel that we either need to readdress or expand on or reduce?
In a shocking development, I have something. And I forgive me for saying this. I know it makes Washingtonians very upset, but there is one thing that the state of California does under the Lanterman Act, which is an entitlement from birth to death for people with developmental disabilities, is they have a law that says if you have a developmental disability, you will get Medi-Cal, which is their Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Period. End of story. Doesn't matter if the feds try to take it from you, you're going to get that. And with what we're facing at the federal level, I think it's worth throwing it out there and seeing if we can get a similar bill. Not the whole Lanterman Act, but at least a guarantee that our people can stay on Medicaid. And the state will make up for it if the feds pull it away. Mm-hmm. Just something to put out there.
Just to be clear, every time I say that, if I say something California, that's the Washington, doesn't. Nobody likes it.
I know. I know. I'm sorry.
because I live in California and I experience this.
But maybe if we describe it not as a thing in California.
Right. Well, it is the only state in the union that does it.
Yeah.
But Oregon, Washington, and California got together today, the governors, mm-hmm. and made a wonderful decision deciding that they were going to keep vaccinations in our states mm-hmm. the way they are before they got pulled today from, Florida got rid of all vaccination, all DeSantis. Yeah, they completely do not have to be vaccinated. So babies, old people, people immunocompromised, don't go to Florida. It's usually where my people go to die anyway.
Oh my God.
Sorry.
Susan, do you want to see if there is a committee that would perhaps like to look at the legislative agenda and come back with some recommendations in, or Bob as acting chair, to come back with a recommended priorities for the November meeting?
I think that'd be lovely. Would anybody like to join that meeting? Join that group?
I can do a meeting. I do have something going on in early November that some of you might know about, so it's a little bit of a crazy month.
Right.
But I'd be happy to, I can certainly make a meeting or two for sure.
I can make a meeting.
And you can email things. And
great. Yeah, we got three over here, and
depending on the dates and times, yes.
And you too, Bob.
Yeah, Bob, the chair.
Oh, yeah, I thought I was
Bob's
doing
the chair.
And I'm not
going to
be around for the November meeting.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bob, Amy, Gabriella, Randy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mostly I'm learning from you guys. This is good. Get me ready.
All right, so we're making good progress on this.
Okay. anything else?
Well, because I had changed my CGM right before I came, so I was urgently low.
Do you need more sugar?
In my sweet carrots and my Milky Way that I had squished in my purse.
Do you need anything else? Or do you need something else?
Nothing back.
I don't have any other sweets.
We can get you something.
I'm 53.
Oh my gosh. 53 is not very high.
Okay.
Do you need anything else right now?
It's just got to kick in.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'll go the other direction.
Yeah.
I have something in my car. I think it's tough.
No, I just
need to go to my car.
It's going to be fine now.
Chocolate will be fine. I think I have something in my car.
Well, the good news is I'm not driving myself home, right, Bob?
Right. You're not, but you do need to
get something
from
you. That tastes good.
Okay,
you know where it is, right?
Downstairs.
Yeah.
Oh,
that is. Oh, we got a little sugar and electrolytes. That might help.
Yeah.
You have a water?
I do. I have my water bottle right here.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, medical. But I think that it sounds like y'all just formed a committee for the legislative priorities that you'll work between now and the November meeting to bring something back for recommendations for the advisory board. And then I think that's it.
Yeah. Sounds like that's it.
You feel like closing the meeting?
Yeah. Okay. And then you will be running the November meeting.
Sure.
Because I'll be on. All right.
The November meeting's on the 5th, correct?
Let me double check. Yes, I think that's right. Look at my calendar.
Yeah.
Yes, November 5th.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Without objection.
So, the legislative agenda will continue to be a work in progress and be ready to present at the November meeting, which Bob has graciously agreed to run. And unless there's something else for the good of the order, I think we are adjourning our meeting. Yes.